You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson.
Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people.
Good morning. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during this show, we share the stories, the expertise and knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. On today's show, we're going to be talking about exiting your business, something that most of us will want to do at some point or another. And to do that, we're joined by three absolute experts. So we're joined by Christina Naroki of Weller's Accountants, Emily Hodge of the Henley Coaching Partnership, and Misha Brooks of Ox Advisory. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming our three experts after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we are talking about exiting your business. So something that's really, really important for us all to consider. So let's start by introducing our three experts, if you don't know them already. So Misha, for those who don't know you, can you introduce yourself and indeed your business?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Misha Brooks. I'm one of the directors of OX Advisory. We are a boutique Oxfordshire-based M&A firm. Bit of background on me, been in the industry for over 10 years, led kind of over 40 deals in the SME space, anywhere between kind of 1 and 200 million in terms of value. So all sorts of different businesses, all sorts of different shareholders.
Amazing. And second up, Emily, for those who don't know you.
Hello, I am Emily Hodge. I'm a partner in Henley Coaching Partnership, and we are business coaches who help founders to get financial freedom with and from their business. Those two things are probably quite important for us to talk about today. I help a range of industries, so e-commerce, financial, professional services. And when I'm meeting a business, there are three particular things I'm looking at that relate to the exit. So I hope we'll get to talk about them today.
Amazing. You can score me afterwards whether we cover the three. And last but definitely not the least, Christina.
Yes, hello. I am Christina Naroki. I'm a partner in Weller's Accountants. So I am based out of our Oxford office, but we also have a large office in London and two other offices in Tame, Banbury. We're a medium-sized practice, as I said, stretching across London, Thames Valley. Logo is a business oxygen, and that is hopefully to enable business owners to breathe more easily.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Christina, because we've got a fellow love for Labradors, you get the first straw. You get to pick a song first. So what's your song choice and why have you picked it?
My song choice is Night Changes from One Direction. I am a big One Directioner. That song actually does remind me of Liam Payne, sadly. So that is why I've chosen that one.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking about exiting your business. And to do that, we're joined by three absolute local experts. So Misha, Emily and Christina, who have kindly joined us to give you some really practical advice and tips. So let's start with Misha, really, if that's okay. Can we start with quite a big question? What are some of the things to consider about exiting your business?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of people who or business owners always kind of sit there and think, how much is my business worth and who is going to buy it? And there's a whole multitude of different options and different mechanisms for exiting a business, whether it's an EOT or a share sale to a trade buyer. So the first step is really to kind of understand which one of those is potentially most suitable for you and also how much you need to get out of the business to essentially achieve an exit, which is going to allow you to either retire or golf and do something else that you're interested in. So I'd say the first step to do is sit down with an advisor and understand what valuation you want or what valuation you need it to be and where the business is now. That'd be my first kind of tip to look at. And then from there, you can start exploring the different options available to you.
Amazing, amazing. No, really, really good place to start. And Emily, I think that a phrase that I love is having no plan is a plan to fail. So I guess at what point does that plan start? At what point would you work with your clients to start the plan around the exit? Should it start from right at the start of the business? How soon?
Well, yes, it should do. But I just want to pick up on something that Misha said, which it sounded like he said, or maybe go to golf. And I'm like, actually, that is quite a lot of people want to do when they are exiting or have left their business. So it's a good point about what lifestyle do they want to be at the end. And in answer to your question, Ben, I think that a lot of founders don't think about the end. They think about how do I get this product or service off the ground? People excited about it. How do I sell it? How do I get the thing that I want met? We are all inherently ego driven, right? I'm a psychologist, so and I am the same. It's okay to be ego driven, but that's where we start off. So a lot of the time we're not thinking about the end. In a few cases, I might be speaking to someone at a startup stage and they are already very aware of the age that they want to be when they finish, what they want to be doing next. But generally, it's so unclear to them because they're so in the moment with the product or service that they are building. However, of course, if somebody was to come to me before they'd set up their business, I'd say start with the end in mind, like good old Stephen Covey tells us to, because without that, you can't have good direction and you will probably lack focus, you'll lack efficiency if you don't get those things really clear. In every case, I'd say the best plan is to have some version of plan, and it's okay if that plan changes, right? It's absolutely fine if we go from A to B to C, right down to Z, each time we have an idea of where we want to be. But if we do it just flying by the seat of our pants, we're not going to get there very well. Of course, I'd say having an advisor on board from the start is good, but costs, when you're very much starting out, when cash is not your king, you have to be really careful of them. At Henley, we are generally specialists when somebody has grown. We are not startup specialists, and we're quite honest about that. We're there when someone's been there 3, 5, 6 years in, and we're really good at that point where they're getting to what does that end look like now? Where do you want to be? What do you want your life to be like afterwards? For us, that's where we found our sweet spot, because we know that the plan for them is much clearer than at the startup stage.
Absolutely. Christina, I think this is a really good point to bring you in, because I think that one of the biggest reasons in my experience that deals don't happen is because of cash or because of accounts. And it's really important that businesses should take their accounts seriously from day one to day exit. What are you seeing across your clients? What are some of the things that you should be considered early on to make your business really exitable?
I think I'm just going to pick up on one of the points that Misha made. It is about thinking about how much money you want at that exit. I think sadly, you know, it is all about the numbers, but sadly people don't always take into account the tax element. So, you know, somebody might think, oh, I'm going to sell when I can get 2 million, but 2 million for a business does not mean 2 million in your pocket. And so that is really, really crucial that you've got to look at the number that you are going to get out of it in your pocket. With most deals also, there is an initial payment and then there's an earnout. So again, you know, most people aren't coming out with that 1 million, 2 million in their pocket. They're maybe coming out with 500,000 and then another 500,000 in 3 years' time. That doesn't always kind of fit with the plan that they have unless they've talked to an advisor. So that is really, really key for me, that you have to be looking at the numbers quite early and what they're going to mean for you in your pocket.
Really good advice. I think Misha and I were having a conversation the other day, weren't we, Misha, in terms of the percentage of businesses that go on the market that are actually sold, and then the percentage that are actually sold for as you so rightly say, Christina, the number that individual needs. Misha, a thing that I'm really keen to build on with you really is due diligence and that openness. So how do you build your business in a way that it can be picked apart and actually those buyers can get that information? But then also from a buyer point of view, what should be the things that you're looking at?
Yeah, sure. So the main thing that you can do to really add confidence for a buyer as well, actually, is having good control over your numbers, your management accounts, your monthly management accounts, KPIs, and anything that really drives your business forward and your sector forward. So for example, in recruitment, understanding what your split is between contract and temp staff, understanding what margin is you're making on each, understanding which clients are the biggest, how much margin you make on those biggest clients, and then looking at those elements and seeing how can I alleviate any concerns ahead of time. So for example, if you had a very large client who was making up 30% of your revenue and a good bit of your margin as well, it would be sensible if you could to get them on a longer term contract, because then the buyer is able to sit there and say, ah, he's thought about these things, he's looking at these, he understands where my concerns are going to be. So for a buyer, what they're concerned about is what's going to decrease the value of this business once I've purchased it. Because what they're purchasing is the future profits of the business in a lot of cases. So as soon as there's an element that's going to add a risk to that, they'll start to consider that in their valuation. And also it'll become a focus point in due diligence. So the more we can alleviate those concerns or show that we have thought about them and we've prepared properly for them, the more confidence that gives a buyer. And that's really what it comes down to, is confidence. The more stuff you can help and prepare for, the better that due diligence process will go. When things go wrong in that process is twofold. It's either where people haven't prepared and they're rushing to get responses out, and those responses are either incomplete or poorly thought through. And then that raises more and more questions. And then you get into a bit of a cycle of people questioning the response each time, which doesn't help anybody, takes up time and causes frustration. The second thing is where a business owner who is looking to sell takes their eye off the ball during the process. And by this, I mean, realistically, a business and running a business is a full-time job. It's more than a full-time job. So then when you're trying to handle things around due diligence as well, because you haven't prepared, that takes time as well. And there's only so many hours in a day that you can dedicate to both of these things. Hence why it's important to have an advisor on board, and it's important to prepare, because both of those things will impact the valuation at the end or what you receive at the end, and hopefully make that process of due diligence more smooth as well, and potentially less stressful, because it is stressful for everyone involved, both the buyer and the seller.
No, absolutely. No, really good advice. Really, really good advice. Right. It's time for another song, and then we will continue the conversation. So let's go with you, Emily. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
I've chosen Now I'm In It by Haim, who are a three-sibling American female trio who are just awesome. They're currently going viral on TikTok at the moment for a different song, but this is my favourite of theirs.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is The Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. As well as our guests being experts on exiting businesses, they've also got some good song choices. No pressure to our final song choice. But if you are just tuning in, we're talking all about exiting your business. And I think it's something that any business owner should really, really be considering. Emily, I think one of the things that you're so good at the Henley Coaching Partnership is focus on having fun along the way and not just focusing on that exit, but making sure that you're getting cash and you're getting fun across the way. Can you just share in a much better articulated way than I did that vision, and why is that so important?
Well, when we first meet a business owner and we are coaching them, well, I should say we meet them a long time before we coach them necessarily. We start with their vision and their end point in mind, because for them and for us coaching them, it makes it much easier. We can constantly refer back to, you know, that thing you said you wanted in 3 and 5 years time. Do you still want it? And why are you not focusing on it if that's what you really, really want? And yes, that is financial for us for sure, but it is also lifestyle. It is, if you have kids, where do you want them to be? If you want to help your parents out, what does that look like financially and otherwise? If you want to be moving, what does your house look like? Those are the things that make the money worth it, right? We are buying people time and freedom, and ultimately that's what most people want in life as well. So I guess for us, the vision is the thing that it doesn't become this, I can never achieve that. It becomes, how do we get that? We break that down into very, very clear time allotted cycles. So we might say you want that vision in 3 to 5 years, but what does that mean in 1 year? What does that mean in 6 months? What does that mean in 3 months? And for the business, that's really important, because then they're making good, efficient, financial and otherwise decisions in the business that are going to lead them to where they want to be. One thing about this, the way I describe that there as well, is I think it sounds kind of selfish, doesn't it? It sounds like all business owners only want money for themselves. And ultimately, especially these days, most businesses are ultimately purpose driven. So they want money and financial freedom, but they want purpose and for their and the world to change. So their vision is often, yes, I want this for me, but I see the world being a better place if my vision is acquired, if it is, if I exit this business in this way, I am happy and the world is better. So we're always really keen on that side of it as well. It isn't just about us and what we want.
Amazing, amazing. Christina, I think I'm going to bring my stat back out, and apologies for this incredibly boring stat, but 80% of businesses go to the market and never sold. And I guess with that in mind, there are going to be a big percentage of people that haven't worked with three experts like yourself who aren't able to exit. So with that in mind, how important is it to ensure that your business is making commercial sense across that journey? And how important is it that you know your numbers and that you're taking your dividends and your pension and all of those kind of things, just to stress we're not giving financial advice?
Yeah, hugely important. And actually, I think if you're a watcher of Dragon's Den, they obviously go into the figures a lot with people. And, you know, people can have a brilliant product and they can have an amazing idea and they can have an amazing plan. But if that's not backed up by the figures, you know, the Dragon's Den investors don't invest. So that's a really good example of how you have got to know the figures. I think just picking up on your stat, I have been personally involved in a number of sales where, you know, the entity has put themselves up for sale, and then it hasn't gone through. The main reasons for that is, you know, a bit of lack of transparency from the start, not having the right figures available, not having the right information available. And you kind of get 6 months in and possibly $100,000 down on, you know, advisory costs, and then the deal falls apart. And that, you know, I have seen that in action, unfortunately. So I think just having almost that collection of financials in your back pocket, even kind of 5 years before you're thinking of sale, just collating all of that stuff and being as transparent as you can with a potential purchaser. And, you know, if you're not getting the right GP out of a certain product line, it's better to be honest about that from the start and just kind of say, look, you know, the GP on this product should be X. We can't seem to make that happen, but maybe you as a bigger entity might be able to make that work. Transparency for me is absolutely the key to the deal going through.
No, absolutely. No, really, really good advice there. And Misha, just in terms of structuring a deal, do you find that when you're talking to businesses, and I think Christina and Emily have touched on this as well, in terms of the amount of cash that you get in the end, do you find that when you're talking to a client, it's the seller that is set in that, e.g. they're thinking, do you know what, I want to do a management buyout, I want to do an employee ownership trust or a trade sale or whatever? Or do you find that actually it's the market that dictates how that works? And what are some of the things that you could consider early on with that in mind?
Yeah, sure. So ultimately, anything, and I say this with a pinch of salt, is worth what someone else is willing to pay for it.
Absolutely.
And that translates here as well. The best chance of getting the highest possible price is having multiple people making offers and all wanting it for a strategic value in terms of when they're buying a business. So that's how you can kind of help determine and maximize the value you can get from it. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's always the right option. So a lot of the time you'll have a business owner who sits there and says, yes, I want X amount for my business, but I also want the staff to be looked after. I want to make sure that the future of the business and my legacy is looked after. What I don't want to see is my business be swallowed up by a larger entity and the doors suddenly close tomorrow because they've just taken all my clients and got rid of my staff. So a lot of the time, there's way more to it than just finding the highest price. It's finding the right deal and the right buyer who's really going to look after that business and treat it with the respect it deserves moving forward. And in the other case as well, if people don't have high valuations or a number they need to reach, there's other options to explore, such as an employee ownership trust or a MBO where you sell it to, it's called a management buyout, where you sell it to an existing team in the business. There's also management buy-ins as well. So there's lots of different structures available and a lot of different types of buyer available and deals. It just comes down to what people want to achieve and what their goals are. And those goals don't necessarily have to be financial. A lot of the time it's driven by that, but it helps as well to think outside of that and what they want holistically from the deal.
No, really, really good. Really, really good advice there. Emily, I think it's time to come to goal setting, isn't it? So in terms of deciding that goal, because I think that I am one of those people that absolutely love a goal, but let's move away from me. And I think if somebody's listening right now and they're thinking, do you know what? Some great points have been made. Of course, they think that. But I don't have a goal. I don't know what I'm working towards. I don't know where my exit is and I don't know how to get there because I don't know where it is. How do they start that process? How do you start working towards that goal if you don't yet have it? How do you decide it?
I suppose I'll be pedantic and say I would class the difference between a goal and a vision as quite significant. So I would always say start with the vision because that's ultimately the thing that they want to get to. And usually it is further away. I go like there because it feels like it's only a vision and it isn't real yet. The goals for me are the things they need to do on a shorter term to get to that vision. So it depends. We usually assess whether somebody's got the ability to be clear in their vision first and then work back to their goals, or whether they're better at going, what do my goals need to be on a short-term basis to get clearer on my vision? It depends on the type of person that we're meeting and the founder that they are, that we might choose one version or the next. Let's say we're starting with vision and they're very clear on what they want to be in 10 years' time. We then start working backwards and their goals would literally be, what do I need to do in this next quarter in order to achieve the thing for the year and the 6 years and the 16 years ahead. Honestly, when people say, I don't know that I have a goal or I don't know that I have a vision, often that is about getting into their head and working out if that really is true, because often it's about, I'm too scared to admit what my vision is because I don't think it's possible. And what we try to get people to do is say, what would you do if all the constraints were removed from the vision that you want? What would that look like? And you have to do a bit of work on someone for that. You might need to get them quite relaxed and just to be free and easy and not judge themselves. But ultimately, if you can get the idea of what they actually want without thinking about the constrictions and constraints, that becomes much clearer for them. And then if you work right back to, you know, what is my goal, we can do all sorts of planning together. We've got Excel spreadsheets and systems. That's not the issue. It's whether somebody does actually use them and is consistent in the achievement of their goals. Behavior change with anybody on anything is the toughest thing, right? It's about knowing that you want to do something, setting it very clearly, having time limited points and milestones, and then making sure that you're consistent in your approach. That stands for whether you want to run a marathon, eat differently, or sell your business for 10 million in 10 years' time.
Amazing. No, really good insight. And Christina, I'm sorry, I'm going to come back to accountancy. What I'm really keen to understand is, or share with the listeners, is really what should a good business do in the world of accountancy? And I appreciate the first thing is to go and talk to Wellers, obviously. But before that, I think it's really, really important that a lot of businesses, business owners aren't experts in finance. And I think in that case, they absolutely need to go and find those experts that can help them. But how often what is good practice? Should businesses have management accounts? Should businesses use a bookkeeper as well as an accountancy firm? How up to date should financial information be? And I appreciate there may not be a one size fits all, but I think it'd be a really good insight to share with those listeners.
I would obviously always say that you have to have very up-to-date information just to enable proper decision-making, really. How do you decide whether you can invest in a new piece of equipment if you haven't got management accounts to be able to support that, and certainly a cash flow to be able to support that expenditure? I think the advice is different, probably depending on the size of the business, because obviously all of these kind of professional people come with costs, don't they? For me, a bookkeeper is essential. Obviously, an accountant is essential as well, but you don't have to get the accountant to do the bookkeeping. Quite often, it's more cost effective to have a bookkeeper do the day-to-day financials for you. A good bookkeeper would be able to provide a level of management accounts as well, just to keep you up to date with things. In terms of the accounting services, we often kind of check the quarterly management accounts. We often prepare them. We certainly often go to board meetings, let's say on a quarterly basis, with the management accounts to help people interpret them. So I think for me, it's about getting the costs right in terms of enabling people to have good access to the up-to-date financial information. That's really key for me. There are so many accounting softwares out there now, the likes of Sage and Xero and things like that. I think the downside of those is that people think, oh, I can use a computer, I can use Xero. That's not always the case. And I would certainly always at least have a bookkeeper involved in the day-to-day running of the financial department.
Amazing. Amazing. Really good advice.
I just say as well, Christina, that's music to my ears, because often we'll start talking to a client and they will, we're intimately involved in so many areas of their business and life, and inevitably the financial and the accounting side will come up. And I love it when they tell us they have an amazing relationship with their accountant. It's the service that they expected and wanted, and that they can know what's in the contract. Traditionally, it's not that, actually. It's, I don't actually know what our contract says, and I don't think they're quite doing what we want them to do, and they're not telling us what we'd like to hear. And it's almost about, okay, let's realign this relationship, because your business has changed from the 3 or 4 years ago that you took on that accountancy. You haven't yet asked them whether they can do the service that you now need to get you to exit, and often they haven't actually met them in person to even have that conversation. So I love it when we can do some good work on getting a much better relationship between the founder and the accountancy practice as well.
Definitely.
That's very true. And I think it's that whole thing around, we tend to grow with the client. So, we are very aware of cost restrictions in the beginning. And if the service has to be like shaved a bit in the first couple of years whilst they're finding their feet, that's fine. But you're absolutely right, Emily. It's about sitting down, a few years in and saying, right, we have found our feet. Now we've got a little bit of extra spare cash. Could you do quarterly management accounts for us? Could you come to board meetings and interpret this for us a little bit more? That is how you get the growth. Yes. It really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Misha, we've made some great points about exiting business, but this is the final DJ question. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I'm going to go for Mr. Jones by the Counting Crows. It's a bit of an old song, but I really like it. It's often on in our house in the kitchen on like a Sunday morning while we're making breakfast. So yeah, just wanted that one.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Our business breakfasts start from just £15. Find out more at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, definitely go and listen back to the podcast version, because we've shared such great insight around exiting your business, which I think is going to impact every business at some point or another. And to do that, we've been joined by Misha Brooks of Ox Advisory, Emily Hodge of the Henley Coaching Partnership, and Christina Norrocki of Weller's Accountants. So thank you so much, the three of you, already for sharing such insight. Misha, I'm keen to come across to you here and really focus on the what to do when something goes wrong. So a business wants to sell, they come and talk to you, and the business just doesn't have the value, the number that they need, or actually a deal falls through, there aren't buyers, or whatever reason it happens. What should a plan B be? And I appreciate there may not be a one size fits all, but I think sometimes there's a phrase in business that's used, oh, it's never too late. But is there a point it's too late? And what do you do about it? How can you press forward?
No, I'm a big believer in that it's never too late. What I'd say, just kind of circling back to the statistic you mentioned earlier, around 80% of companies that go to market not selling, there's a few different reasons for that. And it's partly down to some poor advisors in the market now skewing some of those stats. But there is a lot of good advisors out there. And what a good advisor will say to you is, it's not a one size fits all approach. Mm. Not every business is going to sell to this perfect buyer that we found the first time round and who we think it's going to be as the buyer straight away. You've got to look at different options. You've got to look at who might be the most appropriate at that moment in time and try and explore those options simultaneously. So there's situations, for example, where I've taken a business to market and we've had a really, really great offer on the table, but for some reason or another, the deal just didn't complete. And the best thing you can do in that situation is take a short break, but then think, okay, what could we do to improve our chances next time round? What could we do to improve the valuation? How can we take steps actively in the next few months or year to make sure we're doing everything we can to get the result that people want? And that's kind of what separates a lot of the time an okay advisor or a bad advisor to a good advisor, is being willing to kind of keep going and keep plugging away, but trying to find the best option and giving the best advice to get you to where you need to be. And sometimes that could even be going back to kind of square one, as Emily said, and looking at your visions and saying, actually, what do I want to do? Do I actually want to go down this process? Because I've had situations where clients have pulled out of deals because they've decided, this isn't actually what I want to do anymore. I don't want to sell my business. Actually, I want to keep growing it for another 5 or 6 years. So there's more than one option always. And ideally, you want to keep your options open and only commit when you have to commit. And that way, if that, something does change or something changes in your life outside of this, then you can go and explore something else.
That, again, really, really interesting point, isn't it? And I think it's a question that I'm really keen to put to the three of you, if that's okay, really, is about driving value. And it's about what makes a business or a person or a offer attractive. Is it the people? Is it the money? Is it the management team? Is it the software or the IP? What do the three of you feel that makes a business really valuable?
All of the above. Getting them all right.
We've completed it. Well done.
I mean,
it is a bit of everything.
Yeah. The biggest thing that we help our founders to do, and it doesn't mean it's the only thing that is important, but we try and make sure that they're dispensable, because if they're still involved too much and it's a pure exit, that the value of that business is not going to be very high. So, but that goes back to Misha's point, is that actually right from the start, they might have decided they want this to be a lifestyle business. They want to edge their way out and they want to be an advisor in it for half a day a month. And have other people run it, but still hold shares, but they feel involved and they don't really want to retire. So, having them not necessarily be the main driver of the business for us is one of the key things we're trying to do for them, which means building their team up very well, having obvious successes, whether it's a pure exit, an MBO, EOT. That's one of the things we're always working on. It's one of the things that we can impact the most as coaches. And we work really closely with both of your, companies in one form or another, but we're coaches ultimately. We're not financial advisors. We're not M&A advisors. So we look at the person and the founder as the most important person to try to impact. And for us, their exit, a successful exit, means exiting them in some way, way before they've exited the business.
Mm-hmm. They're really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. We're the same in terms of saying to people, are you dispensable? And it's quite interesting because in finance, sometimes to save some money, you'll find one of the directors has kind of dropped themselves into the finance director role. And, you know, they're inherently biochemists or something, and they've got this title of finance director. And again, you know, a buyer comes in and goes, so really you're running the finance department, you know, and it is about all of those things about being able to step back and putting those right people in place so that a buyer can come in and just go, right, business as usual, you're gone. It might sound a bit callous, but yeah, you're gone and we're going to take over this business. And yes, you're going to be missed, but you're not going to affect the bottom line by not being here.
I couldn't agree more. As a recruiter, I think that I've taken it into my own business. I think the more people you can employ that are better than you at certain things and employ the very best, there will be a point where you are redundant. There will be a point where actually the business doesn't need you. You might want to be there, of which it's a great choice to have. But I think that my view always is look at each parts of your role and how can you get somebody better than you, which is always something we're striving towards. We are coming to the final stint of the show, but one of the things that I really, really love to do on the show is to leave our guests with a top tip. And I'm very, very conscious that the three of you have given lots and lots of tips across this show. So I'm very happy for you just to ask our guests to get their highlighter and focus on one of the tips you've already made. But if we were to leave one top tip, what would be your last tip? Let's start with Misha, please.
I guess my last tip on this is a lot of people only have one business and they will always only have one business. It's been part of their family almost for as long as it's existed. It means the world to you. So make sure you do this right. Don't cut corners. Don't try and find the cheapest option or the quickest option. Try and make sure you're doing it properly and getting proper advice and proper people involved. Otherwise, all you're doing is selling yourself short, you're selling your business short, you're selling your staff short, and that's not what you should be thinking about. What you should be thinking about is, how can I make this something that I'm proud to have achieved? How can I make this something that's, or how can I help someone capitalize on the opportunity I've built in this business and help my staff get where they want to be? There's a lot of reasons why someone might try and do something quick and easy, but sometimes the hardest route or the proper route is the right way to go. And this is one of those things that I would definitely encourage people to do.
Amazing. Great advice. Tip number two, Emily, what's your closing tip?
Actually, very much follows on from Misha's, because it probably will be one of the only businesses that you run in your life. Try to make it fun while you're doing it. Be as efficient and resilient as possible whilst you're in it. But equally, do not allow your mind to tell you that you can't achieve things that you thought you couldn't. So there'll be often moments where you do need to take time out of the business and stop and rethink and shut things down. And you will think that's not possible. You will think everything will crumble around me. And you just have to allow that to happen sometimes in order for things to build back up again. I've seen many founders burn out, almost burn out, from the ability to not be able to say, I just need to take a break. And I don't mean a holiday. I mean a mindset change that will get them to that final goal in the end. But you cannot make your business the only thing you do in your life. You have to have other things as well.
Amazing. Great advice. And what's the final tip, Christina?
I think I would say be very clear about what you want and write that down. And if money is the most important thing to you, that's fine. Just be very clear about that. If it's about leaving the business and a legacy almost, just be also very clear about that. So I've been involved in sales where actually a legacy, leaving the legacy, and we've talked about it before, like, you know, ensuring that the staff are looked after and things like that, was actually the most important thing to this one person. It wasn't about the money. So I think just to have a very, very clear thought process about what is important. And if it is money, then that's absolutely fine, that that's the primary goal. But yeah, just to be very clear on that, I would say.
Amazing, amazing. Well, thank you so much, the three of you. But that is the end of the show. How quickly did that time fly? If you are just tuning in, we today have been joined by Misha Brooks of Ox Advisory, Emily Hodge of the Henley Coaching Partnership, and Christina Norocki of Weller's Accountants. Three absolute experts here in Oxfordshire who have shared such insight with you. So thank you so much to the three of you for that. We are going to be back next week with some brand new guests talking about a topic impacting on local businesses. And next week, we're going to be talking about where to advertise your business. So something very different. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. Do watch out for the podcast version, which is available on every major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. And if you would like to see my lovely guests, do look out for the video format released on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.